In our next installment in our Midrash class, we're going to be looking at Esav. Okay, typically look at the heroes of our story, and in a sense, Esav is I would say more than anything is a tragic figure, because in the Torah, Esav, you know, when we study the Torah, we give Esav a bad rap, whereas if you actually look at what the Torah says about Esav, so the depictions of him are relatively positive. Obviously, his in the role that his parents play in Vayahav Yitzchak as Esav Kitzai Befev, that Yitzchak loves Esav, but there seems to be a reason contingent on the love. But Rivka Heves as Yaakov, Rivka loves Yaakov, but there doesn't seem to be a reason contingent on it. Okay, but if you actually go through the text of the Chumash and you look at Esav's, the tales in which Esav is depicted, you'll probably find three things where you can legitimately raise an eyebrow about Esav, but even raising an eyebrow is not so crazy. One of them is the first story. You can't say anything about his birth. He's described as an adboni. You're going to judge a baby? That's ridiculous. Okay, and kulok adera seyar. What does that even mean? So we're going to skip his birth. The first story that we have is with Yaakov and Esav, with the sale of the birthright. Okay, and there, the only thing you have there that you can legitimately say Esav is illegitimate about, you know, perhaps, and I'm using the word illegitimate loosely, is Vayivez Esav Asabachora. In other words, Esav has this transaction with Yaakov, right? Some actually look at Yaakov and say that Yaakov cheated Esav. I don't believe that Yaakov cheated him, but that's a longer story. That's not our topic for today. But Esav, Vayivez Esav Asabachora, which basically means that he denigrated the Bechora. Okay, in other words, the birthright was meaningless to him. Okay, is that terrible? I mean, you can argue either way. You could say, all right, it was meaningless to him. Okay, there are some people who in legend and lore, they were supposed to be the king because they're the firstborn. They say, I don't want to be the king. Is that terrible? Right. That's so. Esav denigrated. It was meaningless to him. Okay, so that's the first thing. The second time we see Esav is in the bracha. Right, when Yaakov takes the bracha. Again, you can have any argument you want about Yaakov, whether you think that Yaakov was a thief, a ganav, a trickster, etc. He was going on his mother's instruction, fair enough. Okay, Esav gets upset. Can you be upset at Esav for being upset that his brother took his bracha? No, I think Esav is totally in the right there. Then Esav says, Yikrevu yimei evel avi v'argo asachi, that over this, it seems that I'm willing to kill my brother. Okay, so that's an eyebrow raising. But you're going to go resort to murder? So that is item number two.
He gave it away over food, so it really...
Okay, Gail, I'm not getting into it. Okay. I'm not getting into it because there are ways to understand the story differently. There are many ways to look at it. But the point is that the fact that he feels cheated, in a sense, that the bracha that his father said, I'm going to give to you, go make food for me, and I'm going to give you a bracha... And he comes back, and that bracha has been given to somebody else. I mean, that's a legitimate feeling. But again, it's his feeling. I'm going to kill my brother. That's something which we can be critical of. Okay. And the last time we see Esav is last time we actually see Esav is in his encountering Yaakov when Yaakov's returned after Yaakov has sent him a whole bunch of stuff. Esav is coming with 400 men. Why Esav is coming with 400 men? We don't know. Okay. There are many interpretations. Some say nefarious. Some say Esav goes with 400. You know what? Avram gave 400 to Ephron. There's a significance to the number 400. Yaakov was Avram's family is told you're going to go be strangers in a strange land for 400 years. There is an interpretation in the Midrash that I found that says that Esav was actually a tax collector in Egypt, and he had 400 men with him, and he was coming, and he realized that that infrastructure there was the right kind of infrastructure to be the fulfillment of the place that Avram's children are going to be strangers in a strange land. And Esav says, you know what? Yaakov, you can have your 400 in Egypt, and I'll keep my 400 men, like a 400, 400. So just interesting stuff. So when they encounter each other, so the Pasuk says, so first of all, coming with 400 men, so we don't know what the intent with that is. Obviously, Yaakov takes it to be something which seems to be scary, but even that's open to interpretation. And then... And then when he encounters Yaakov, so he goes over Vayishakehu, right? There are dots over the word Vayishakehu. Right, okay, that's Rashi, but Vayishakehu literally means, and he kissed him. So yes, there are dots, and the dots indicate something. What they indicate, subject of debate. And so if you assume that viewpoint, that there was something evil in intent, then maybe, But Esav, in the conversation he has with Yaakov, is nothing short of magnanimous. He says, you know, keep all the stuff that you gave me. I don't need it. I don't want it. And Yaakov says, no, you keep it. And Esav says, you know, why don't you come live with us? We, you know, cousins should grow up together, right? Your kids, my kids. And Yaakov gives all the reasons why he can't come. And then Esav goes, and that's it. We don't really see Esav again. The next time we see Esav is at the burial of Yitzchak. And then we see Esav's generations. So...
But you also see Esav that he married the wrong women.
Oh, I'm sorry, but that was the other thing that I forgot to mention. Right, those were the three. So, in other words, what actually takes place at this encounter is not so bad, even at all. But whereas you are correct, that was the third thing which I had in mind, that Esav marries the daughters of Benos Chiti, Vatiyana Maras Ruach Le'aviv Imo. Right. I'm sorry. Thank you. That is correct. Okay. So again, the three real eyebrow raising is denigrating the Bechorah, marrying the wrong women, and threatening to kill Yaakov when his father dies. Other than that, but how many times do people say, I'm so angry, I'm going to kill him? Okay, I mean, does he actually follow through with it? In the Midrash, yeah, okay, but not in the Torah. You know, there's a fascinating thought regarding Esav in terms of when he died. Which I think I was supposed to talk about this week. I don't remember, but I'll just mention it briefly. So there are two opposing midrashim, which I did not give you here. There are two opposing midrashim about that. One is that Esav dies at Yaakov's burial. Okay, that they were fighting over who's going to get the remaining burial spot in Me'aras HaMachpelah, and Esav was saying that Yaakov, you gave yours to Leah. And the other one, right? And the other one is mine. And Yaakov says, "No, I have the deed. Where's the deed? It's in Egypt." Ah, okay. So we're going to go send somebody back to Egypt, which is a little journey. And so, in the meantime, the Midrash says that Chushim, the son of Dun, who was a little hard of hearing, is watching this. Says, "What's going on? Why aren't we burying Zadie?" And they say, "Well, Esav, you see, he's standing over there and he's getting in the way." So Chushim goes over to him, knocks him on the head. Different opinions. One that he just killed him, and the other one is that he actually chopped his head off, and Esav's head rolled in. Which is, you know, fun to teach to little children. I never really understood that one. But anyway, now, you look at that story, and Chushim looks like he's evil. I mean, what's because you're delaying the funeral, you can kill Esav? That's insane. Okay, so that's one approach. Another approach is actually that Esav died much earlier. And I actually like this approach for a couple of reasons. Number one, the death of Esav is described as being at the time of the burial of Yitzchak. And if you recall, in Parshas Vayishlach, Yitzchak is buried. It's the end of Perek Lamed Hey, and then Perek Lamed Vav. I got my number. I think it's chapter 36. Is the lineage of Esav. Okay. Now, usually, when the lineage is mentioned, that's the end of a person's story. Like Yishmael, for example, Yishmael's lineage is mentioned at the end of Parshas Chayesara, and then Yishmael's death is recorded. So Esav's lineage being recorded is a antennas. That maybe Esav is actually dead here. And where would that come from? So the Midrash says, and the Alkot Shimoni actually brings both of these. And he says that, remember how Esav said, Yikrivu yimei evel aviv argo asachide, when my father dies, I'm going to kill my brother. Okay? So the Midrash says, Esav went in while Yaakov had just finished burying Yitzchak, and Yaakov was having a moment with Yitzchak, and Esav comes in, and he's about to kill his brother. But Yehuda sees him going, and Yehuda says, what is that guy doing? I'm going to go see what he's doing. And he sees that Esav is about to give the strike. What does Esav do? What does Yehuda do, rather? He defends his father and kills Esav from behind because he didn't have a chance to face him. And he says that is why when Yaakov, and this is also mentioned in Talmud Yerushalmi in a couple places, and that when Yaakov blesses Yehuda at the end of his life, at the end of Yaakov's life, Yaakov says that Yarcha ba'oref oivecha, that your hand is on the back of the neck, Orif is the back, okay, because you defended me at that time, and why did Yehuda defend him, kill him from behind? They were twins. We assume that they were not, what's the identical kind? Maternal is identical?
Fraternal.
We assume that they were fraternal, right? Fraternal is not identical. So we assume that they were fraternal because they're described differently, but they still could have had a similar face, so because siblings can do that. And so the idea was that Yehuda did not want to look at him because he looked similar enough to his father that he might, look like he's killing his father. So there is that viewpoint as well. So which one is true? Okay, jury's out. We don't know. But I find the second one that I presented more compelling for a whole host of reasons. So we'll leave that for what it is. But the two questions we're going to be looking at today is, Why is Esav considered evil, and who is the mysterious man that fought with Yaakov? Okay, so in order to get this idea of why Esav is considered evil, because again, even those stories, I mean, the marriage, that doesn't make him evil, it just makes him misguided, right? I mean, would we say today, for example, that somebody who enters into an intermarriage, that they're evil? Right? No, I mean, it's just, you know, they're not thinking enough about their family, or they fell in love. I mean, I get this all the time. People call me for a bris. You know, I wasn't thinking about it when I fell in love in college, but now that my child is born, I want my child to be Jewish. Okay? I mean, I don't ascribe evil to anybody who does that. They're just, you know, they've made a different choice in life. Why is Esav considered evil? So we're familiar with this because we have these in different haftorahs. Ovadia. Okay, and just in the interest of time, everything which you have, I'm just going to be reading in the English, unless there's a particular need to highlight the Hebrew. Okay, Ovadia. Ovadia, of course, is the only book in all of Tanakh that is one chapter. Okay, so we read the entire book of Ovadia for a Haftorah. Okay, anyway, so what does he say? On Har Tzion, there's going to be deliverance. It's going to become holy. The house of Yaakov will possess their inheritance, and the house of Yaakov will be fire. The house of Yosef, a flame. And the house of Esav will be straw. They will set them alight and consume them. There will be no survivors from the house of Esav, for God has spoken. The Negev will possess Mount Esav. The Shephelah will possess the Philistines. They're going to possess the fields of Ephraim, okay, etc. And you just skip to the very end, and you're going to see the saviors will send Mount Zion to rule Mount Esav, then the kingdom will be God's. And that's the Yivolo Moshe Behar Zion Nishpatas Har Esav. Right? That's the line which we're familiar with. We say it every day in davening at the end of the Az Yashir. Okay, Vayisal Hashem Amlucha. So the point is that one day we're going to rule over Esav. But until that point in time, what's Esav doing? Esav is the opposition. Esav has a leg up, or Esav could have a leg up. Okay, so what does that mean? And here's where we come to Malachi. Ahavti eschem amar Hashem amartem amo avtanu alo ach le'esav li'akov numa Hashem v'ohavas Yaakov. I have loved Yaakov, God says, but you say, in what way have you loved us? Is not Esav Yaakov's brother declares glad, yet I have loved Yaakov and despised Esav, whose mountains I transformed into wasteland, and whose homeland I gave to the serpents of the desert. When Edom says, remember, Esav is Edom. When Edom says, though we were destitute, let us return and rebuild the ruins, this is what the God of hosts answers. They may build, but I will demolish. And so they will be known as the border of evil, and the nation against whom God's anger burns forever. Okay? So is it that Esav is evil, or is it that God hates Esav? Okay, now why God, it's that God hates Esav. Okay, forget about the man Esav. The man Esav was a troubled character. Okay, but was he so evil? Did he really want to destroy everything? There are midrashim about Esav wanting to kill Yaakov and making certain efforts in order to do so. But Esav, you know, was a big talker. He didn't do anything in the end. If anything, it's his descendants. Now, when we look, for example, nowadays, we look at the four exiles. And the last exile was Edom. What's Edom? Well, we know what Edom is. Edom is Rome. Is Rome actual descendants of Esav? It's an interesting question. Right? That's a question which just has to look at the movement of peoples that took place in that time of the world. So even if Edom is not actually Esav, they're the spiritual heirs of Esav. They're just a counter and a foil to Bnei Israel. So we'll leave that for what it is in terms of, you know, Rome, Edom, etc. But the point is that when we look at our galus now, from the time of the destruction of the Second Temple until now, we view it as the galus which is brought on by the descendants, or the spiritual descendants of Esav. That's what Edom is. That's what Edom means. So if the Navi is saying that Edom is what God hates, and Edom is the foil to Israel, well, there's no further proof to that than just our very existence. But what makes Esav evil in that sense? So what we're going to do now is we're basically going to look at this lengthy midrash from the Pesikta, and Pesikta Rabasi, Piska Yud Beis on Zachor. Okay, so remember that Esav has another foil in his repertoire, because he had a grandson whose name was Amalek. Okay, and that is the key. When we think about Amalek, Amalek is the foil to Bnei Israel. From the time that Bnei Israel left Egypt, right, Amalek was the first to attack them, to the time of Shaul, Amalek, to the time of David, right, and just beyond, Amalek was, and Haman, right, I mean, just Amalek is a different kind of foil to Bnei Israel. Notice how we call it Amalek, we don't call it Esav, but we know that Amalek comes from Esav. Okay? So this is, and that's why this is on a section called Zachor, because what's Zachor all about? Zachor is Asher Asa Amalek. Amalek. Okay, so we're just going to read this, and the points which are emphasized in bold are, you can just follow along in the Hebrew if you want, but we're going to be reading in English. Okay, and again, this English translation is my translation, and all the errors that may be in them are mine. You find that Esav the Rasha did not only sin against Israel, rather he sinned against many. He sinned against God, against Israel, against his brother, against his mother, and note how it says in brackets, his father, right? And against Avram. How? He sinned against God when he burned the Torah and burned the temple. Now, is that Esav the man? No, that's referring to Edom. He sinned against Israel when he burned, killed, and exiled. He sinned against his brother when he said, when my father dies, I'm going to kill Yaakov, my brother, causing him to flee. He sinned against his mother and father by going and marrying idolaters. They would burn things before their idols, and Yitzchak would inhale the flames, which caused his eyes to weaken. And we saw a little bit about that in previous weeks. He sinned against our elder Abraham, to whom God had said, you will return to your fathers in peace, because Abraham was supposed to live for considerably longer, but because of Esav, his days were cut short. There is that tradition that Abraham died a little early, 5 years early, because he did not see... Esav go into a sinful direction. Rabbi Abba records that Esav went out into the field at age 15, seduced an engaged woman, and murdered someone, right? Nara Marasa, Shafach Damim. Esav returned from the field, and it says, again, this is Rabbi Abahu explaining, but the actual text of the Chumash doesn't say, it says, Vayavo Esav and Asadevu Hayev. Esav comes from the field and he is tired. What does it mean to come from the field? Just on a literal sense. It means that Esav is a farmer, because the Torah said earlier, Esav is Yodea Tzayid Ish Sadeh. What's Ish Sadeh? A man of the field. What's a man of the field? A farmer. Okay, I mean, Yaakov is a shepherd. We know Yaakov is a shepherd, because when he gets to Laban, he's clearly a very good shepherd. Yaakov is a shepherd, Esav is a farmer. When I was in Israeli graduate school, Dr. Moshe Sokolow, in one of the classes, made the point that the Yaakov-Esav conflict, however you want to refer to it, might be a contemporary resurrection of a conflict of the first brothers in history. Cain and Hevel. What's Cain? A farmer. What's Hevel? A shepherd. Okay, so that Esav and Yaakov are bringing back these old tropes is just, you know, a Torah theme which repeats itself. But in any case, Esav coming from the field and he's tired. I mean, who works hard all day? A farmer, okay? So, you know, just on a shot level, understanding...
More than a shepherd?
What?
More than a shepherd?
I'm not saying a shepherd doesn't work hard, but a shepherd sits in a tent a good portion of the day while the sheep are doing what they're doing. Unless a sheep runs away, right? I mean, the farmer has got to, you know, until they have a tractor doing all the work, farmers work really, really hard. I mean, they still work hard, but it's a different kind of hard. So Esav returned from the field, and it says, and if in the field the man finds the engaged woman. So there's a comparison, right? What's the pasuk say? So because a guy seduces or rapes a betrothed woman in a field, so Esav is coming from a field. I mean, come on. I don't mean to be a big defender of Esav here, but that's a big stretch, right? I mean, again, I'm not saying it's an illegitimate stretch, but it is a big stretch. He was tired, for he had murdered someone, as it says, I'm tired from the killers. Since he did these things, Avram died. Why? Because God said to him, you will return to your fathers in peace and be buried at a ripe old age. What's a ripe old age? That Avram should see his grandson entrenched in immoral behavior, murdering people. And therefore, right when he did, Avram left this world so that Avram should not see it. Okay? Yaakov, who Yoshev Mashal Adashim, Yaakov was sitting cooking lentils. Esav came and said, What did you see that's causing you to sit here cooking lentils? And Yaakov says, because Avram died. I'm sitting, mourning, in pains. I should know how pained I am over his death. So when there will be a resurrection, he will love me if Avram sees my mourning. So Esav said, you fool. You think that after a person is dead and buried, he's going to rise in the future and live? So what makes Esav evil? He denies Tchias HaMesim, denies the resurrection of the dead. So Esav says, I'm going to die. Now, by the way, Esav doesn't mean I'm going to die right now. Esav's not at death's door. He's 15 years old at this point. He says to Yaakov, the birthright which you think is worth something, if you give me some of your lentils, I'll give you the birthright. So Yaakov gave him bread and the bowl of lentils, and Esav degraded the Bechorah. That's another, you know, a thorn in Esav's side that I mentioned before. He sold it to him. By the way, what does sold to him mean? It means that they had a legitimate transaction. And that is one of the key proofs to the idea that Yaakov was not cheating him, that they actually made a sale. Oh, I don't know. I don't want to start exploring that. He wanted to kill him. He said to his father, "Now I understand why he called him Yaakov. He took my bechora." Okay, he says that after after Yaakov took the bracha, Rivka sensed that he wanted to kill Yaakov. She told Yaakov, "Listen to me, run to Lavan." Yaakov, he had to leave his mother, father, go for 22 years. I'm skipping to the part which is in bold. So this is King David said, "Master of the world, remember the sins of his father and the sin against his mother. Do not wipe away." What was the sin against his mother? Rabbi Yehuda said that at the moment Esav emerged from his mother, he cut apart her womb. This is something I mentioned last week in the context of Rivka's pregnancy, or what was that? 2 weeks ago, I don't remember. And so the Lord said, "For 3 sins of Edom, he destroys his compassion." Okay, what does it mean? His compassion? He destroys the rechem. Okay, and Rabbi Nehemiah said he caused her to be unable to be the mother of 12 tribes. What's the sin against his mother? That he took her out at night when she died. Okay, that's something also which we mentioned in the context of Rivka, that Rivka's death is not recorded in the Torah. Why is it not recorded in the Torah? Because guess who wasn't present at the time? Yaakov. And so we know about Rivka's death. It's hinted to us from the death of Rivka's nurse, Devorah, and but Rivka's death specifically is not recorded because they did not want to say, "Oi, look at this guy whom this lady nursed." And that's my translation. That's not the way the Midrash speaks. But that's the idea that if the only son that's going to follow Rivka to the grave is Esav, then that would be a very poor reflection on Rivka. Contrast that to when Yitzchak dies. When Yitzchak dies, who's present? Esav and Yaakov. Okay, they're both present towards the end of Parshas Vayishlach. Okay. When the mothers died, they were brought out in the day, big deal be made, but everyone coming to perform final acts of kindness, I'm up to the second to last section of bold, but because she was taken out at night, her death is not even recorded as Sarah's is. Devorah's death was recorded, Rabbi Abba says, because the ceremony was not held, her death is not recorded. God said he did bad to all, to his father, to his mother, to his grandfather, to his brother, so I will do bad to him, to erase his name from the world. Remember what Amalek did, wipe out the memory of Amalek. So maybe you can even make the argument that the idea of ascribing the nation of Esav as the nation of Amalek is the first way of wiping out Esav's name. And then we say, well, wipe out, you know, his descendants through Amalek. Okay, the point that we have here is the point which are put in bold in terms of these are the different things which are ascribed to being Esav's Russia status, Esav's being wicked, evil, etc. So even though it's not mentioned specifically in the text, but there's a pattern. There's a pattern of somebody who denigrates God. There's a pattern of somebody who just doesn't appreciate things which are valued by God, which God in turn gave over to his children, and saying, "This is, you know, things which you should value," and the idea of preventing his mother. I don't even know what this means, but that he ripped apart her womb and prevented her from having more children is something which I struggle with every now and then. I mean, certainly when I think about it, it doesn't keep me up at night, but I do struggle with it when I think about it because what does that mean? Was it supposed to be that Yitzchak and Rivka were the parents of the 12 tribes? Right, there is such a view. Yishmael started a nation with 12 tribes. So why can't Yitzchak start his nation with 12 tribes? And it ended up skipped a generation and ended up with Yaakov. But is it because Rivka had such a terrible pregnancy and therefore just was unable to have any other children? Or was it seriously because of Esav? Again, it's difficult to try to change. It's difficult to try to ascribe evil and intent to a baby. I have no idea what that means. But at the same time, there is that viewpoint in the Midrash. In the Midrash, it's one on the hit list against Esav. Okay, so we can put that sheet aside. It doesn't, if the answers are not satisfactory, not much I can do about that, but I did want to show you a significant viewpoint, and that is a lengthy Midrash in the Psikta showing us why Esav is considered to be Russia. And we see through the passages in Ovadia, and even more so in the passage in Malachi, how God viewed Esav forever and ever until such time as Esav is finally defeated. When God reigns supreme, then Esav will be judged in that final way. Okay, so put down that sheet, and we're going to move on to the second sheet, which is a man fought with him, and who is the mysterious man? Okay, so just look at the very top of the page. The very top of the page has the psukim that we need. This is in Bereishis, Perek Lamed Beis. I mentioned this before. Actually, I did not mention this before. Okay, this is the episode when Yaakov is trying to run away. Well, he's on the one hand, he's running away from Lavan, but they've already parted ways, so he's not really running from Lavan anymore. Now he's trying to get away from Esav and the 400 men based on his not really knowing what Esav's intent is. Okay, and the Torah tells us that Yaakov had his family cross over Ma'var Yabok, right, the Yabok crossing, by Yvaser Yaakov Levado, that's where we are now. Yaakov was left alone, by Yavek Ishimo Adalos HaShachar. And a man struggled with him until the morning rose, okay, until dawn. By Yaakov Lo Yecholo, by Yigat B'chaf Yurecho, he saw he could not defeat him, and he struck his thigh. Now, I always like to play this game of who identifying the dangling modifiers and pronouns. But the one thing that is clear, it's not clear who could not defeat whom, but it is clear that Yaakov ends up being injured. So we kind of work backwards to assume that the ish that Yaakov is struggling with could not defeat Yaakov, and therefore he did this. And the guy says, send me kiyala shachar, because it's dawn. By Yomer, he said, Lo ashalecha chokim berachtani, I will not send you unless you bless me. By Yomer, I love mashamech, and he says to him, what is your name? By Yomer, Yaakov. And he says, Yaakov. By Yomer, and he says, Lo Yaakov yamer shemcha, your name will no longer be Yaakov, ki im Yisrael, rather it will be Yisrael. Ki sarisa melim anashim atucha, which we typically translate to mean, because you struggled with God and with men, and with men, and you were capable, or you were able to overcome. Vayishal Yaakov, Vayomer, Yaakov asked, and he said, Agido Nashmecha, tell me your name. Vayomer, and he says, Lama zat tishal shmi, why are you asking my name? Vayivarach v'sosham. There are some who actually say that his name was Lama zat tishal shmi. I love that interpretation, because Agido Nashmecha, tell me your name. Vayomer, and he says, Lama zat tishal shmi, which is fascinating. It's like an Abbott and Costello routine. Who's on first? What's on second? I don't know who's on third. What's your name? Why are you asking my name? What's your name? No, what's on second? I don't know who's on first. Okay. By Yikra Yaakov Shem HaKom Pani El, Yaakov says, he calls the name of the place, the face of God, Ki Ra'isi Elohim Panim El Panim Atinatzel Nafshi, because I saw God face to face. Fascinating, by the way. Who else gets to see God face to face? Moshe Rabbeinu. So that is just, what is it indeed that Yaakov saw here? The sun rises as he's passing through Penuel, and he's limping on his thigh. Okay, so there are a lot of questions. It's when you have a mystical kind of encounter in the Torah, there are always going to be a lot of questions because we don't have a frame of reference. We don't understand what this means. What does it mean to struggle? The Torah describes the person here as an ish. However, it seems from the way that the anish meaning a man, but it seems from the way the story unfolds that there's more to this person being a person than meets the eye. Okay, because of everything that we know about the story. Again, having unfortunately or fortunately having learned this before, so we're familiar with certain biases which we may have. So let's take a look at what the Midrash says about this, okay? And the whole reason why we look at this is because of the way the Midrash presents it. Take a look at the Psikta, for example. An angel appeared to him in the form of a shepherd. So this is an angel already. It's a shepherd. He said, you cross yours and I'll cross mine, meaning you bring your stuff across the Yabok and I'll bring my stuff across the Yabok. And after he crossed this, he went back to see if he had left anything, and the man started fighting with him. And who is this man? The angelic officer of Edom. Soro shel Edom haya. Okay, and what's Edom? Esav. Okay, now, once we get that idea implanted in our head, that this Ish is not really a man, but he's really a kind of angel, and the angel is a guardian angel of Esav, whatever that means. Okay, so we see that there is the beginnings of a struggle, and this is one of the reasons why, if you recall, so I just want to confirm, but the Haftorah for Parshas Vayishlach is the book of Obadiah. That's the second passage that we saw. Sorry, the first passage that we saw in the previous part of the class of why is Esav considered evil. The entire book of Obadiah is the Haftorah of Vayishlach because it talks about this struggle between Yaakov and Esav. Midrash Tanchuma says Yaakov remained alone. A man fought with him. This was Samael, the officer of Esav. Now, we don't always see Samael as being identified as the officer of Esav. Samael is sometimes referred to as the angel of death. Okay? So the fact that Samael is being ascribed to being the role, being the officer of Esav, is just interesting. But he wanted to kill him. He wanted to kill him, as it says. He saw he could not defeat him, so he crippled him. Now, that just goes to show that Yaakov was very strong. And that is a different discussion about Yaakov's strength, which we also saw with Yaakov moving the rock off the well, and other tremendous feats which Yaakov was able to accomplish in his lifetime, some of which are indicated in the text of the Chumash, and some of which are not. But the point is that here, if Yaakov is indeed fighting with an angel, and the angel can't defeat him...
I don't understand that.
Right. Again, that's fair. You can look at this entire episode and say, I don't understand it, because we don't have a frame of reference. We don't understand. Okay, when you look at... I don't know if you saw... Whatever. Every now and then they have movies with Greek god like characters, Thor, Zeus, Hercules, right? And these people who are half gods, they have a superhuman kind of strength. Or you have movies with an angelic kind of creature, and of course the angel could do whatever, or just superheroes, right? So it's not a fair fight between one of these creatures and a human being, and yet. Here we have a non-fair fight, and how's the human faring? Pretty darn good, right? So, what does that mean? I don't know either. Okay. So, anyway, he crippled him. What did he cripple him? But even after Yaakov cripples him, he still is holding on to the guy, and he can't leave unless Yaakov lets him go. So, again, fascinating. What does that mean? What does that say about Yaakov? Okay. Yaakov Shimoni says, a man fought with him. There are those who say this was the angel Michael. Michael said to him, just as I, one of the great angelic officers, this is what you did to me. You're afraid of Esav. In other words, there's a whole viewpoint that this Ish/Malach was there. Whether he was a guardian angel of Esav, because nobody says that Michael, for example, was a guardian angel of Esav, but that what he's doing is to show Yaakov how he can look. If you can defeat me, then when you're going to encounter Esav, you have nothing to worry about. Okay, because Yaakov, Ayira, Yaakov, Be'od, Vayetzer, Lo, Yaakov, when he heard that Esav was coming with 400 men, Yaakov is frightened, because he just doesn't know. There's just too much of the unknown. Rabbi Tarfon says Michael had not permission to move until Yaakov gave him permission. As it says, send me for the morning has arrived. Yaakov said, are you a thief or a criminal that you are afraid of the morning? Many groups of angels came, for they needed Michael. Okay, again, this idea that it's Michael, as opposed to Samael, which we saw in the other Midrash, shows that it's not the guardian of Esav. And they said, Michael, come, for it is time for the solo, and if you do not perform, this song will be lost. So he pleads with Yaakov, please let me go, so the other angels will not burn me up for having missed the opportunity to sing. Yaakov says, nope, not until you bless me. So he says, which is more important, the servant or the son? I am the servant, and you are the son. You should bless me. Yaakov says, nevertheless. Okay, meaning that the Malach is the servant of God, and Yaakov is, right, B'nai Yisrael, right, the God's children, B'nai B'chori Yisrael. You should bless me. Yaakov said nonetheless. And he said, your name will no longer be Yaakov, it's going to be Israel. And he said, you are blessed, the son of a mother, that you entered the palace and you survived. Okay, meaning that Yaakov is struggling with an angel, whatever this means, that they're having this, right, what is this space in which they're having this struggle, but Yaakov is surviving. Rebbe said, when they were fighting, Michael's group wanted to endanger Yaakov, but God appeared to them. When God appeared, Michael was weakened, and he knew he would not defeat Yaakov, so he injured his thigh. God said, good work, Michael. You've made my priest a blemished person. He says, Lord, are not I your priest? And Hashem says, you are my priest in the heavens, but he is my priest on earth. Immediately, Michael called Raphael, which is the healing angel, and requested that he stand at his side and heal Yaakov. Others say the son God will one day use to heal. That again, it's not the sun God. That's okay, that. This is just a very poor translation. Shemesh asid lizroach al tzadikim. That the God will one day use the sun to heal the righteous. That was revealed to him. Okay, yeah.
Just quick. Is it true or false that an angel, a malach, has one job?
That's our tradition. But in other words, that each time the angel appears on earth, the angel has one job.
Right. But he can appear more than one
time. Sure, sure. Okay. It's not like, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings, you know. An angel could have, Malach could have different jobs. Sometimes they're related. I mean, just look at the Abraham story, right? The one who came to heal Abraham also came to save Lot. So it's one job at a time. Yeah, one came to tell Sarah, one came to heal Abraham, and one came to destroy Sodom. So the one who came to destroy Sodom didn't do anything at Abraham's house, but how many went from Abraham's house to Sodom?
Two.
Right? It says, Vayavohu ha'anashim Sodoma. So the explanation is that the one who came to heal Abraham, save Abraham, also came to save Lot. Okay, so that's an idea. All right, the Chizkuni, now this is not Midrash, I know, it's a commentary, but I just wanted you to see a vast overview of the story. He says that he saw, the angel saw he could not defeat him, meaning he did not have permission to harm him. Vayarki lo yacholo, he was not allowed to. God did not let him. God had sent him to strengthen Yaakov and to bless him. Nonetheless, he injured him a little to prove he was an angel. In other words, Yaakov is trying to figure out who's this guy. Okay, he's really tough. I'm a strong guy. I can't defeat him and end this thing. He keeps on coming back. Why? Because he's a malach. But he can't beat me. I'm Yaakov, I'm Mr. Strong. But so he had to prove that he was an angel, so that Yaakov could say to him, give me a bracha. Remember, the idea that Yaakov gets this name Yisrael, God confirms it or reaffirms it later on at Beit El, but it first comes from this story. Honest thought, even though God promised to watch over him, the angel injured him because he was afraid of Esav. So this is fascinating. I love this view. This was done so he would not be able to flee. Okay, the whole point is that Yaakov says, "Vayad ha'machaneh nishar." Actually, lifleita is not really good. Okay, lifleita. Yeah, well, lifleita doesn't mean to run away. It means that the other one will come in to be a reserve. But that's a different thing. But the point is that Yaakov, when he divides up his camp, it seems that one of them is going to fight, and the other one is going to be, you know, off on the side. But the thing is that Yaakov is has a lack of confidence. Right? Remember what Yaakov says to God. Katonti mikola chasadim mikola emes. Right? I'm belittled. I don't think I'm worthy of any more. By the way, Avram had the same kind of feeling. Remember at the Bris Bein Ebsarim, Avram had the same kind of feeling. Avram says after the Battle of Sodom, you know, what's going on? I have no more merits. And God says, don't worry. Scharcha harbe ma'od. You have a lot more going for you. And the same thing happens here with Yaakov. Yaakov says, you know what? How can I face Esav? And God says, you must face Esav. And the Malach comes to injure Yaakov to make it that he can't run away. Because you have to face your fears. The only thing you have to fear is
fear itself.
So stop fearing fear itself and just face Esav. Same thing happened to Moshe in the hotel when he was afraid of Paro. Right? That crazy story with Moshe in the hotel with the Tzipora, the Bris, and all that stuff. What was it? You have to realize that you need to be able to face your fears. You can't just run away. You can't just run away. Turn over the page. We have three more midrashim, okay? The first one is Shir Ashir and Rabbah. Rabbi Rakia said, a man fought with him. We don't know who had more control. Was the angel on top or was Yaakov on top? From that, the angel said, send me for the morning has risen. It seems the angel needed permission to go sing his praises, okay? Which means that Yaakov really won, even though Yaakov was injured. He appeared to him as an officer of Esav. This is the meaning of when Yaakov says, now you can look at the last two lines in the Hebrew, Ki al kein ra'isi panecha kiros p'nei Elohim. Right, when Yaakov sees Esav, he says to him, now I see your face as if I'm looking at the face of God, meaning your face looks like your guardian angel. Was Yaakov trying to flatter Esav? Say, oh, I'm seeing the face of God. No, he's saying, look, I just fought with a guy last night and he looks like you. Okay, but it wasn't you. I know it wasn't you. So that's cool, right? That's what the Shir Ashir and Rabbah suggests. Okay, next one is the Medrash Tanchuma Parshas Vayishlach Siman Zayin, where he says Yaakov remained alone. It says about above that Yaakov was afraid, right? Right? Yira Yaakov meod. When God saw Yaakov was stressed, Rabbi Barachia says God sent four groups of angels to fight with Esav all night. Okay, now this is, by the way, reminiscent of what happened with Lavan. Remember what happened with Lavan? Lavan's chasing after Yaakov at the end of Parshas Vayetze, and what does Lavan have the night before he meets Yaakov? He has a dream, and in the dream God says to him, watch out buddy, don't mess with my Yaakov, you mess with my Yaakov and you know, big trouble for you. So the Midrash is suggesting a similar kind of thing happened with Esav. All that first group came, and they're going to fight with Esav. And Esav says to them, "Who are you?" And the Basakas Rishna Amar Lahem Lemiatem Amrulo. They say, "Banav shel Yitzchak." They say, "We are Yitzchak's sons." Now, what does that even mean? Right. In other words, we're representing Yaakov. And they met him. So he says to him, "Hold on a second. Wait, guys, why are you fighting with me? We are grandchildren of Abraham. You're Yitzchak's children." Again, not that Esav would know what that means, but we are. I'm Esav. Abraham is my grandfather. They still came to fight. Esav said, "Hold on. You're Yitzchak's, but I'm Yaakov's brother." They said, "Out of respect for Yaakov, we're going to leave you alone." And this is what it means that Yaakov was left alone. Vaser Yaakov levado. Because Esav no longer had people who were keeping him up, who were stopping him from coming to Yaakov. Okay, but in the meantime, Esav has reason to think and give pause. Again, we do not know what Esav's intent was when coming with Yaakov with the 400 men. We don't know. We only know Yaakov's response to it. But when Esav's men and the 400 men show up, then we see the way the Torah describes Esau's behavior towards Yaakov, which, as I said before, is nothing short of magnanimous. Yaakov did not know how many miracles had been done for him. When he met Esau in the morning, Esau said, "Who is this entire camp that I encountered?" And we assume that it's referring to the different groups of animals that Yaakov had sent to Esau the previous day. What's the Midrash suggesting? It's what Esau was dealing with all night. He does not say that I saw. Yaakov did not know that God had sent angels to him. So Yaakov said, "To find favor in your eyes." Yaakov says, "Oh, you're asking about the animals that I sent you." But Esav's saying, "Who are all those people bothering me last night who were making my life so difficult and who made me perhaps reconsider how I'm going to be meeting you today?" When God saw he's afraid, okay, and that's referring to Yaakov's fear, he sent Michael to stage a fight with him. The angel appeared as a shepherd and says a man fought with him. And again, what's the point of the fight? So there are a few different possibilities. We saw from the Chizkuni that it's to injure Yaakov so he would not run away. But another one is to show, "Hey, Yaakov, if you can defeat an angel, with Esav, got nothing to worry about." Okay, so it's to inspire him. Hold him to a draw. Right, exactly. Last Midrash for today, Midrash Yelamadenu, who says the following. Rabbi Yana explains, "A person who vows but does not fulfill the vow is held accountable before God, who says, 'Where is so-and-so who made the vow?' When Yaakov arrived in Aram Naharaim, he answered Laban on each question." Right? Remember, Yaakov, when he left, it's Vayidar Yaakov, Neder, Lemor, Emiyel, Elohim, Yodi. This is at the beginning of Parshas Vayetze. Yaakov makes a vow. He says, "If God is with me, Shmarani, watches over me, Badarach Asher, Nachileu, Nasan, Lilechem, Lechol, Bekot Lavosh. He gives me bread to eat, and he gives me clothes to wear. V'shavti v'shalom b'savi, and I return home. V'yashem li lokim, and God's my God. V'avon azos asher samti matzeva yeh b'se lokim, and this stone that I've set as a monument is going to be a house of God. And what's that place called? Beit El. So Yaakov had made a vow. He became wealthy, but he did not complete his vow. What's the vow? Right, he had clothes to wear. He had food to eat. Nasan li lechem lechol beged lebosh. What does he need to do? He needs to go back to Beit El, and he needs to make a b'se lokim, a house of God. So God sent Esav to kill him. God said, "You didn't fulfill your vow. You can't. You're not allowed to not fulfill your vow." And he lost the entire gift he gave to Esav. Right? Everything that he sent to Esav goes to Esav. But he did not feel the impact because he was so wealthy. An angel was sent to fight him. This is the officer of Rome who wanted to kill him. He could not, so he injured him, causing Yaakov to limp on his thigh. And Yaakov still did not get it. God said, "What will it take to get this righteous man to understand for which sin he is being punished?" Finally, after all the encounter with Esav, what does God say to Yaakov? It's actually not. I was about to say it's not only that. That's another thing. I don't know why he doesn't mention it, but it's another thing that's a patch to Yaakov. Okay. Now, again, why does Dina have to be the victim? Much bigger discussion, right? Much bigger discussion. But Yaakov, right? The Dina story happens in between, and after the Dina story, God says, "No. When are you going to get it? Come, get up and go to Beis El. What's wrong with you? What will it take to understand for that for which sin he is being punished?" So God said, "Go up and go to Beit El. All of these punishments came upon you because you did not fulfill your vow. If you want the difficulties to end, go fulfill your vow, the one you made when you were running from Esav, your brother." Okay, so what is the point A man fought with him. Who is the mysterious man? We don't have a good answer. The Midrash has conflicting views, whether it's Saro Shel Esav, whatever that means, whether it's Michael, whether it's Samael, whether it's some other angel, and what the message was. But it goes back to the same, to at least an underlying question, which is that this is part of Yaakov's struggle with Esav. Part of Yaakov's struggle with Esav is a spiritual struggle. When Yaakov left, running away from Esav, Yaakov made a spiritual vow. He said that when I come back, and my physical needs have been met, because remember, the blessing that was given to Yaakov, the one that he took through his mother's guidance, the one that he took, which was supposed to be given to Esav, was primarily a physical blessing. Right, the fat of the land, you'll have success, wine, etc., produce. So that is a physical blessing. When Yaakov comes back and his physical needs are met, Yaakov has to fulfill the spiritual side, that which distinguished him apart from Esav. And he didn't do that, and that is part of the point of all of the struggle with Esav, is because Yaakov, all you had to do when you came back is go straight to Beis El. Don't let Esav be a distraction to you. Go straight to where you have to go. Or at the very least, after Esav, goes straight to Beis El, but Yaakov doesn't do that. And so what the Midrash is showing is that Yaakov was being given a, I don't want to call it a patch, but a redirect. Whether it was through an officer of Esav, an angel, whether it was Michael, whatever, Yaakov needs to realize that the encounter with Esav is over. You have your physical, Esav has his physical, now you need to deal with your spiritual. And I think that is really what the Navi is also telling us. Just to go back to the beginning of the previous class, the first part of the class is that there's a physical component to Esav's existence and a physical component to Yaakov's existence. But what makes Yaakov rise above is Ve'olam Moshe Me'aretz Yisrael Nishpados Harisav Vaisa Lashem Amalucha. Right? If we can crown God as king, and remember that it's not about our human experience and about our own kingship and ruling over Esav in the form of man and power, but it's rather about crowning God as king, then all of this stuff doesn't really matter, because the lesson which Yaakov brings home is the lesson which he started with. And the lesson which he started with is, Elokim, if God is with me, he watches over me, take care of my physical needs, but then I will make a base Elokim. So it's not so much about the mysterious man as much as it's about this Vayavik Ishimo, that Yaakov is fighting with an ish, right? In other words, what's ish? Physical. So there are actually those who say that this whole thing was a dream, that Yaakov didn't actually have a physical fight with somebody, but that Yaakov is fighting with what's bringing him down to earth. Yaakov, you have to rise above. Ki sarisa im Elohim va'anashim va'tuchal. You struggle with God. It's not about a struggle with man. It's about a struggle with God. And that's where Yaakov has to rise above. And that's the thorn which Esav continues to be in his side. Because what's Amalek? Amalek is physical. Amalek tries to bring us down in the physical realm. And so our job is to rise above. If the B'nai Yisrael could only rise above our physical needs and our physical, just our the grounding of the physical world, I think that the V'olam Moshe Me'aretz Yisrael Nishpados Harisav Hashem Amalucha would of course be the precursor to the coming of the Mashiach that we continue to yearn for. Okay. Amen.